This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I have a very special guest, a literary agent from New York City. Is there any other kind? It is just wonderful. His name is Mark Gottlieb, and he's with Trident, the premier literary agency in New York. So I'm very excited that Mark is going to be joining us. Meanwhile, I'm waiting for my first guest, who is Peter Reynolds, and I hope he'll be on the phone in a few minutes. I also want to remind everyone you have only a few days to send your book in for the Writer's Digest Indie Author Book Contest. So if you haven't done it yet, do it this weekend. It's a wonderful opportunity for you to get mentioned and get your critique and whatever will help you to know exactly how you're doing with your book. It's a wonderful opportunity. I'm just waiting for Big Ed in there, and I hope that Big Ed is right there. Are we on? 1 minute, and we're going to be 1 minute. That's what happens on live radio when you're waiting for somebody. And what else can I say? Oh, I want everybody to read a book this weekend. You know, if you are watching the 10th rerun of NCIS that you've seen, or the upteenth, repeat of A Law and Order, it's time to put down that remote control and pick up a book. Because really, you know, one time a repeat, twice a repeat on a television, that's about it. It's not going to do you any good. It's not going to help your brain cells to develop. It's not going to make you a more interesting person. But just by reading a book, picking up a book and, you know, start building up those brain cells, all those little gray cells in your brain need some stimulation. Reading, of course, is, I think, the best. And also writing. If you are, you know, if you want to do something for yourself, to build yourself up, write a book, write a memoir of your family, do something, a children's book, whatever. Speaking of children's book, I have a super, super author on today, an amazing author of children's books. Hi, Peter, are you there?
I am here. I'm here in Boston.
Okay, well, we are talking to Peter H. Reynolds and about his new book, Happy Dreamer, and about some of his other books. Peter, I just love your books. I love Dot.
Oh, thank you so much.
It is. Dot is such a wonderful book, and I will talk about the new book, Happy Dreamer, in a minute, but I just want people to know that Dot is such a good read. And recently I've been getting more involved in listening to Audible books, you know, being a purist as I am and having read 10,000 books. Books are what I do. But lately I have really paid attention to Audible versions of books. And the Audible version of Dot is amazing.
Oh, wonderful.
It's really, really good. And the narrator is just perfect.
I actually haven't heard that version yet.
So. Well, you have to listen to it because, you know, sometimes, you know, I always want parents to read books to kids, but to have that Audible version of, and that particular narrator is fantastic. As a matter of fact, recently I had the narrator for A Gentleman in Moscow on my program, and he read a small portion of the book. And my listeners got so excited, they went out and bought the book based on hearing it read.
And that's great.
So I'm
it's a great book, by the way.
Isn't it a marvelous book, a fantastic book? And so I'm finding more and more people are interested in the Audible versions, and I think the Audible version of Dot is one of the best I've heard.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for saying so. And there are definitely lots of versions of the Dot out there now. It's in over 25 languages.
Oh, wow.
And there's actually something called International Dot Day now, which was started by a teacher. in Iowa, Terry Shea, and it's a celebration of creativity on the on September 15th, all focused around the dot. And last September, we had over 7 million participants in 142 countries participate in celebrating the themes of the book, which are really about bravery and creativity and how we are all going to make our mark on this world.
Well, perhaps you will come back in September to promote this day.
That would be great.
I will put it on my calendar and we will have you back. And meanwhile, let's talk about Happy Dreamer. It is, well, first of all, I love your drawings. Now, you are one of these fairly rare children's book authors who not only writes the books, but also illustrates the books. I love your drawings. They're so whimsical.
Thank you.
And this feeling of motion that you always have in your characters. I just love how you are able to capture that sort of free spirit. It's wonderful. That's the only problem about doing a radio program is I can't show all the pictures because they are so wonderful.
Yeah. The character in Happy Dreamer definitely is in motion quite a bit.
He's
almost as though you're seeing someone's dream, and he's flying through the air, and his arms are spread, and he's just soaring, and it's almost like ballet. And in fact, I was just thinking, it flashed in my mind, my little sister when I was growing up. She took ballet, so we would go with her. And funny enough, there was a shop that sold comic books across the street, so that was our excuse to go. You know, we go and have to watch her do ballet, but then I'd run across the street and buy comic books. But I think I was, you know, I remember seeing all of those, the moves that the ballet ballerinas would do, and in particular their hands that, you know. It was very purposeful, you know, the way that they would gesture with their hands, and it was part of the poetry of the ballet was the hand movement. So, if you look in my books, there's kind of a ballet quality to them. So,
oh, definitely, they move, they're in motion. It's a thrill. I just love looking at them. And
thank you so much.
Now, of course, the story is wonderful. And what was the original title?
The original title. So it's Happy Dreamer, but it had a longer title. It was Amazing, Delightful, Happy Dreamer. And of course
ADHD.
Initials, right? ADHD. And that was, I was inspired when I went to a conference at Harvard University, and it was on learning differences, which I'm really interested in. I love exploring different ways that people learn in creative ways that you can engage students. So I was at this conference, and they had these amazing speakers, and they were all incredibly successful entrepreneurs, business people, broadcasters, and they shared their stories of growing up and really struggling in school and not doing particularly well, not because they weren't smart, it's because their heads were in another place. And they all shared that experience that they all were very much in touch with their dreams of the future, and they kind of had a pretty strong hunch about who they were and where they were going, and they just kind of powered through, and they went on to follow their dreams, and they became very successful. And the person who was running the panel said, all of our speakers today described their learning style, and they all shared attributes of ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And I was thinking to myself, well, gosh, it sounds, sounds a lot like me growing up, you know, because it was tough for me to pay attention in school, and I was drawing madly, And then I thought, well, ADHD, it sounds a bit cold and clinical. I wonder if I could warm that up a little bit. So I took a pencil and I wrote ADHD, and I imagined something more positive. And I wrote amazing, delightful, happy, dreamer. And I took that home and I wrote a poem about my brain and me growing up. And that poem became a story, and Scholastic Books saw that story and fell in love and said, we need to get this book to every child and every grown-up on the planet.
I agree.
So they published the book, and it launched this week.
Well, it's exciting always the week of when a launch comes, but this is a book, I think, that will have a long, long shelf life because it touches a chord, an important chord in people. There are so many, you know, not when they, you know, diagnose somebody, they say they're ADHD. It's like it can be so horrific, and people
right.
don't see the absolute beauty that you see in this ability to dream, to imagine, to and how you captured it, the floating around in of the mind where you can just soar and
yeah.
think and of creative things. And I had an experience in Sunday school where we had a number of ADHD kids, and of course, so you know, sometimes people have the misconception that they can't do anything, they can't be stretched. And it was so wonderful. We had this wonderful, wonderful teacher who took these children, and she taught them. She wrote a play for them completely in Hebrew.
Mm.
Now, the kids didn't speak Hebrew,
well,
but she completely put it into a form that they could grasp, and they soared with it exactly like this. And it was so wonderful to see. And this kind of thing, this ability to see beyond, you know, just a word or a title that somebody gives somebody, is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, those labels that we stick on kids and also, you know, adults as well, but especially with kids, when you get a label stuck on you like ADHD and or ADD, of course, it's, you know, the word disorder is pretty powerful, and you know, you begin to believe those labels, and it might be years and years to try to peel those labels off, you know, because you think, well, a disorder, doesn't that mean
something's wrong,
out
yeah.
of order,
yeah.
there's a problem? And really, if we could change, you know, the D to a B, you know, from a disorder to a blessing, that's what I want. I want kids to realize, like, their brain, their mind is absolutely unique on this planet. And it's a beautiful, wonderful thing. And you know what? We're all different. We have different kinds of brains. We learn differently. And it's all good. And, you know, we have to wish the best for everybody, no matter what their learning style is. And I think the more we can cheer kids on and adults, too, because, you know, it just, you know, when we graduate, it's the journey continues. And we adults still need love and encouragement as well.
Well, I love the way that you have really captured a word that is important to me, joy. You capture in your, well, in all of your drawings, a joy for life. And I want people to go and look at your webpage, which is, you know, it is delightful. You have a lot of your drawings there. And just to spend a few minutes to look at your webpage, which, of course,
sure.
is your name.
It is my name, Peter H. Reynolds.
Yeah.
So you have to stick the H
in
there.
Yeah, you have
there.
To stick the H in.
Right? The H stands for, someone actually the other day said, does the H stand for happy?
Okay.
And I thought that was perfect, but it actually stands for Hamilton, not the hit Broadway musical, but the name of a town in New Zealand where my grandfather was born.
Oh.
Hamilton, New Zealand.
Oh, isn't that nice?
So that's the H in Peter H. Reynolds. So www.p peterhreynolds.com, and you can find all my books and my artwork there and my other projects and learn about my twin brother.
I know. I was thrilled to read about your twin brother. He is talented.
He's super talented.
I love his line drawing.
Right? He's amazing with a pencil, what he can do. And, you know, when you're speaking of dreaming, you know, if you're dreaming alone is wonderful, but it's also, if you're trying to make a dream come true, it's really tough on your own. And if you can find someone who supports your dream and cheers you on, you're much more likely to have your dream realized. And I was very lucky that I was actually born with this dream cheerleader, my twin brother Paul. And so for years and years, he's been sort of cheering me on and encouraging me. And I, one day, about maybe 6 years ago, I turned to him and I said, "Paul, you are so creative and so talented. You're a great writer and a speaker and a philosopher and an educator. You need to share your stories with the world." And so I challenged him to write a book, and he wrote a book called Going Places, which is a story about thinking outside of the box and working together in creativity. It's a really lovely book. And then that started a collaboration series. We just finished our fourth book together. And so that makes me very happy to see Paul also dreaming and doing. And that's kind of what I wish for my readers, is that they dream, but they also find fellow dreamers and people who can cheer them on and help them realize those dreams.
Well, you are very lucky. That is, I think it's just fantastic that you have a brother who you can work with and work together to do so much, because I know that you're involved in more than just writing books. You are actively working on projects to help people.
Yeah, well, the plate is full, and it keeps getting bigger. I guess I need a bigger plate, but we have a company called Fable Vision, and it's up in Boston, and we create software, interactive applications, in particular for kids in school, to help them express themselves creatively. So we have animation programs. We have a publishing program that we're launching this summer, and we also have an engineering program for kids as young as elementary, middle school, to design on the computer and then print out these creations that they've created. You know, anything from a boat to a gear to a bridge. It really takes their imagination and makes it real. It's really quite stunning when you see it happen. And for a lot of kids, you know, learning it from a book just doesn't do it. They need to actually get in there, make it their own, get their hands on the project, feel the thing that they made, share it, talk about it. It's really powerful learning, and we're really excited to be doing this every day. And connecting with great educators. And I just want to make a big shout out to any educator, teacher out there listening, because you're doing such amazing work, and you are literally changing the world by inspiring kids around you to be amazing, happy dreamers.
Well, you're right. You know, now I'm a homeschool mom, so my kids never went to school, but they did have tutors, and those mm-hmm. tutors, you know, because they were, my kids were smarter than I am, and I think somewhere around by the time they were 7 years old, they were doing calculus, and they sort of left me behind. I was able to stick with them up through their teenage years, when I was still okay with literature and history. But teachers are so important, and I was talking to our poet laureate, the United States poet laureate, Juan Felipe Herrera, and it was a third grade teacher. You know, he was very poor in California. His parents were working in the fields, and he just happened to have a third grade teacher who recognized his ability, and just went out of her way to encourage him. And it was so wonderful that when he became our poet laureate last year, she was still alive at 96, I think.
Wow.
So she lived long enough to see that the child that she helped and that she went out of her way to help became the poet laureate. And that's what teachers can do. Teachers can make such a difference and can do so much. And I know I'm so happy that you know, they've taken DOT and mm-hmm. using DOT as a tool to encourage children to be creative. And what was the teacher's name who started this?
Terry Shea.
Terry Shea. Well, you know, I want to, I'm going to contact you. I want to put you down on my calendar, and let's have Terry on too.
Do you know what? That would be so wonderful.
Wouldn't that be so nice? Wonderful. We'll have Terry on. Because fantastic. She deserves recognition for what she's done. Because, as I said, when people read DOT, they will see that and your books have that ability to, you know, cut through everything else and strike a chord within a person's heart. And I'm just so thrilled with that. And of course, Happy Dreamer, which they've done a beautiful edition of. Isn't it gorgeous?
Yeah. I have to say, it almost looks like it's been gift wrapped.
Exactly, it is. It's, you know, one of the most beautiful covers I've ever seen on a children's book. And I mean, if I bought this for a kid, well, I'm buying some for kids. I'm going to just take that cover and frame it. It should be up on the wall because just to look at it is a joy.
Yeah, well, I actually have my own bookstore. Our town didn't have a bookstore, so I opened one 15 years ago, and so I was just there moments ago. I was signing books. In fact, I just signed about six to graduates from college, and I just thought that was neat that, you know, that this picture book is being given to graduates who are starting their journey into life, and they're, you know, they're, the person who was buying them said, you know, my wish for them is above all to be happy and to make sure that they don't defer their dreams, that they don't get so busy that they forget to dream. And I thought that was really, really beautiful.
Well, Peter, you know, I want to thank you so much for being on today. I'm going to have you back in September, and
fantastic.
We're going to really have a great show. And how about all of you coming? What about your brother? I want him to be on too.
Sure.
Okay, we're gonna make a whole day just for you. Okay.
I love that.
Okay.
Fantastic.
And everybody,
well, thank you.
I just want to tell my listeners again to go to Peter's website, Peter H. Reynolds. It's a really lovely website.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks and bye for now.
Okay. All right. Happy dreaming.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye bye. Bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
And to celebrate March as National Sleep Awareness Month, Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY. And Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543. Promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back. I am back with the author's favorite person in the world, a real New York City literary agent, Mark Gottlieb.
Oh, hey, that's so nice of you to put it that way.
Well,
I appreciate that.
Well, that's what, you know, and every author, everybody who writes a book, boy, that's what they want, a New York City agent.
Well, sure. I mean, that makes sense since, you know, a lot of people, I suppose, think of literary agents as the gatekeepers. And, you know, who doesn't want to get into heaven?
Oh, well, fairy godmothers and fairy godfathers. That's what you are, because a writer gets so thrilled if they can get through to an agent that it's... I have actually seen a writer dance around a room when she heard from a real live New York City agent. So,
oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the biggest step to getting published. You know, publishing houses don't really accept unsolicited queries from potential authors unless it comes by way of a literary agency.
Well, that's why you're so important, because you know your job. I mean, that's the important thing. Well, sometimes, you know, when I speak at a lot of writers' conferences, and the writers will say, well, you know, I don't think the agents really are looking for books. I said, no. I said, they are looking for books because they want to make money. But they're looking for books that can sell and also books that touch them, because you agents are, you know, so important in the process. A publisher has to trust you and that you have good taste and that you can find a winner.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it does carry sort of a stamp of approval when it comes by way of a literary agent's office. A lot of publishers, even if the author has written an amazing manuscript, just they don't want to have to go through the publishing process with someone who's unfamiliar with that process. So an agency can help an author who's just a little bit wet behind the ears. And, you know, I think there's a lot that an agency can do for an author in their lives, you know, in reviewing their contracts and handling their accounting, but also, you know, doing things like commenting on marketing and publicity plans, putting together book-to-film and TV deals, audiobook deals, foreign translation deals for the author. It really covers the entire gamut of, you know, what they would need in the life of their book.
Well, of course, you are with Trident Media Group, which is, I think, the premier literary agency in the world. And...
That's nice of you to say. Thanks.
Well, I mean, everybody in the business knows Trident, you know, that if people, because what you do, and I know that your agency is well known for building careers, you work with authors and you know, it's not a one-off thing. You work and you want to build their careers and keep them going. And so that's why your group has such a fantastic reputation.
Yeah, that's true. I think, you know, our reputation is attributable exactly to what you just said. You know, if you look the agency up on publishersmarketplace.com, which is where all the industry news and deals are announced, it's like the gold standard in book publishing. You'll see our agency ranking number one there, both for fiction, for nonfiction, both for overall volume of deals and monetarily as well. And we've ranked that way for well over a decade consecutively. which is how long that site's been around for, but it's really because a lot of the philosophy here is that not just the agents from the agency are homegrown. You know, a lot of the agents at the company started as assistants and then grew later in their lives into agents, but also, you know, the wisdom we impart to them and handling their clients, it's not enough to merely do a deal for an author and just remove yourself from the process. You know, when you're invested in an author's life and career, it's worth kind of taking on like a managerial role to, like I said, to things like commenting on a publisher's marketing and publicity plans, see over their audiobook narrator or what the audiobook cover looks like to make sure it's in keeping with the print edition, all those facets. I think people who just kind of churn deals and then, you know, move to the next deal rather than spending time with an author's publication, it just doesn't produce a good result. And so
exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, do you just like sometimes just pinch yourself and say, you have like one of the best jobs in the world. You get paid to read. I mean, that is like, that is for me, like, you know, I've read, I think I've been reading since I was like 4 years old, and I've read 10,000 books, and I think I have 3,000 or 4,000 in my home at the moment.
Oh, wow.
And so I read a lot, and I never got paid for it. And so it was funny, when I started this radio program, I realized, my goodness, I'm still not getting paid for it. But it's just so much fun to think of being a literary agent, and actually, that's the job, to read books. I love it.
Sure. That's a big part of it. I think, you know, a lot of people, they picture a literary agent kind of just sitting at their desk, reading, and some authors have even told me, I picture someone kind of scruffy with like a tweed jacket with elbow patches, you know, thick rim glasses and, you know, gray hair or something. But I don't know. That's kind of just a perception that people have of like I suppose, a very literary or professor kind
of
agent.
You are a handsome young millennial, I think.
A lot of people, I think, yeah, in this business, there are a lot of young people. It takes a lot of time and energy to read and, to keep up with this sort of business and entertainment. Reading is a big part of it. It's not the entire job. You know, a lot of the reading has to be done at home, in our free time, on weekends, and along a commute. Because, you know, when you're in the office, the phone is ringing, people are knocking on your door, and, you know, you have to put out whatever kind of fire. So I wish it was just merely me reading and getting paid to do that.
How many submissions a week do you get?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the agency as a whole probably gets thousands.
Oh, thousands, I'm sure.
An individual agent, you know, could get hundreds a week. There was a point where we were running Google ads for the website, in a big open call for submissions, and I was getting like 150 query letters a day easily. But yeah, we go through all that. We have a system on our website that prevents duplicate submissions and manages all the submissions. So, that's all under control. And I make a very strong point of reading all my query letters. Some of my best books have come that way, just kind of digging through the slush pile like that.
Well, you have some wonderful clients. Samantha Chase is one of your clients.
That's right, yeah. She's a New York Times bestselling author.
And I really love her books. And I noticed that she's got a new book coming out in May. Mm-hmm. And you have to organize it so that she'll come on my program, because her books are the Enchanted Bride series.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that's a delightful series. And I look forward to talking to her. And who are some of your other clients?
Another client of mine is Kate Moretti. She's a New York Times bestselling author. kind of mystery crime, thriller fiction, a lot of it in kind of in the domestic noir type of vein. And she was actually a Goodreads Choice Awards finalist for her book, The Vanishing Year, for the mystery crime category. And the competition for that category was fierce. I mean, there were Stephen King, Louise Penny, you know, there were big names in that genre competing with her. And she was essentially making what was like her major debut with Atria, part of Simon & Schuster. So that book has, Vanishing Year, has gotten amazing praise. She's got another book coming along called The Blackbird Season, which will be publishing this fall. You know, there are many other award-winning and best-selling authors I work with, that the agency works with.
And Chuck Grossart is one of your clients.
That's true. He's an author of science fiction.
Yeah, I love sci-fi.
It's fun, you know, a lot of it. I think he knows how to take a lot of certain tropes in the genre and play with them. And he's published by 47 North, the sci-fi fantasy imprint of Amazon Publishing. And, yeah, that book just got both, I think, a starred PW review. It's gotten a wonderful book list review, and there's just been some great attention for the book. They've been comparing it to The Twilight Zone, and, you know, a lot
he's
of kind
good.
Of,
he's really good.
Yeah, I think he's definitely an author to watch for sure.
Now, you know, authors are always asking me about this dreaded query letter. Some authors, you know, they spend a lot of nervous energy working on that query letter.
Of course, yeah.
What grabs you in a query letter?
Well, yeah, I will say that a well-written query letter will usually grab my attention, because in my mind, the query letter is, it's like the author's storefront and everyone's first impression of both the author and their manuscript. And usually if the query letter reads well, a good indication to me that the book will also read well. It's hard to just go by, you know, the meat of the query letter in looking at, you know, okay, the book's about X, Y, and Z, but this query letter is terribly written. I'm not even just talking about spelling and grammar. I mean, like, if it's just not a letter that grabs me. And then I think the other thing is, up front in a query letter, you want kind of one or two sentences, like a hook or an elevator pitch, that really grabs the reader from the get-go, so that they want to get into the rest of the query letter. Because the experience of most agents is sort of like what I told you a bit earlier. They're getting tons of query letters. They only have time to read partway into them before they lose their attention and hit delete and, you know, move to the next one. So I think if you can do something up front, that's good. I mean, there are all sorts of ways you can go about it. For instance, I remember there was an author who was writing a book about basketball, and he was querying, and he couldn't get the attention of any agent, so he resolved to write out his entire query letter on a basketball with a Sharpie, and he just mailed it out. And, I mean, how can you miss that, right? So there are all sorts of creative ways you can go about it, but I'm not encouraging people to do things like that. I mean, we prefer electronic queries. But, you know, I think that's important. Well-written, attention-grabbing.
Well, now, recently somebody brought to my attention that somebody in the publishing world, I won't say who, suggested to authors who have independently, you know, published their mm-hmm. books, indie authors,
yeah.
That they... you know, if they want to query agents, mm-hmm. they write to the agent and they don't mention that it's been published. As a matter of fact, this person suggests that you pull your book and write the query letter like it's like it's never been published.
I give people the benefit of the doubt. So even if a book has been self-published and I look it up and it doesn't seem to have performed well, but the query, like I said, the query letter reads well, the book sounds interesting, I'll read the manuscript and I'll give it a fair chance. I have a client who published a book to little or no success, self-published, you know, maybe sold 10 copies. That was the author's friends and family that care enough to buy the book. And I said, let's when we approach publishers with this, not tell them that you self-published. I said, you might want to go as far as to remove the edition from online so that it doesn't remain a scar upon your name. And we placed the book with Penguin Books. And we were able to do a film and TV option deal, and the book's published overseas. I think it's published in China. My general advice to an author would be that not every agent is going to be willing to give an author the benefit of the doubt when they see a self-published book that, you know, was published to little or no success. Of course that happened, because it takes a lot of marketing, a lot of attention, and, you know, just a lot of savvy to make a self-published book a success. People, you know, will, given the chance, will always take the path of least resistance, the easy way out, and just think to pass on the book. So to avoid that, you know, in a business of people who can say no, with only a handful of people who can say yes, why give anyone else more reason to say no?
Okay, because, you know, there are, I have come across some self-published authors who have, you know, sent me in their books, and many have appeared on my program. I mean, that's a nice thing about my program. What I do is I have a nice mixture. As you saw from my website, I talk to so many of the best-selling authors. But I also like to help, you know, independent authors or
sure.
authors from smaller publishing houses to be able to get out there and to promote their books. Because, as you said, it is difficult. The marketing of a book is very difficult.
Of course. I mean, how do you differentiate yourself when there are millions of self-published books out there? You know, but at the same time, if you're going to self-publish and you want to use that as a springboard to get into major trade publishing, then the idea is you want to sell at least like 50,000 copies of your book at a decent price. You know, that will usually pique the interest of most any agent or editor at a publishing house. Otherwise, what's the point in doing it? Just for the sake of vanity or wanting to tell the story? You know, if you're going to self-publish and you want to live in that world and do that, then I say do that.
But then you have to put the effort into it, because in the end, you know, writing a book is a wonderful creative process, but it's also a business. And I always tell writers that, you know, they have to understand that. It's funny also when I'm working and meeting, you know, new authors, and they don't understand the process. They understand that they're going to find an agent, but they still don't understand. Sometimes they'll say, okay, well, this book is done. I'm giving it to an agent. That's the way it's going to be published, and I want it published in 2 months. I explain to people, no, that's not exactly how it works.
That's not realistic. I mean, most publishers, they have all these gears they need to start turning, like their marketing, their publicity efforts. Most books don't publish for at least 12 to 18 months from, you know, when there's a fully signed contract with a publisher. So people who in the self-published space are used to, you know, clicking and pressing a button and having their book published, you know, it's not going to be the same thing. But the payoff is usually much better in the traditional publishing space than an author can really get. In the self-publishing space, there are a lot of authors who experience a modicum of success in self-publishing, and they think that, oh, this is great, but what they don't realize is that they have a lot, right, because they have a greater share of their royalties without a publisher, without an agency's commission involved. They have a lot, a big share of their royalties, their proceeds, but they have a lot of nothing rather than a little bit of something.
Yeah, exactly. Now, when... Now, of course, you have a lot of experience with Audible books, and how are you finding, how do you work with that? When you have an author, you have a book, you've taken a book, do you let the author select the narrator?
Well, we do a lot of work with, Audible, among other audiobook publishers. They're an Amazon-owned company. Brilliance is the sister company to Audible and Audible is kind of like the parent company. Brilliance produces the physical audio editions, and Audible usually does the downloadable digital audio. But yeah, we work with that publisher. Built into, I think, most of our agreements with audiobook publishers, just by the nature of the fact that our agency has a lot of clout and our business really goes to the bottom line of most any publisher. You know, we get things like, yeah, cover consultation, so the author, you know, has a say over what the cover might look like if it deviates at all from the print edition cover. You know, consultation over narrator, so they can help the publisher pick and choose what the audiobook narrator might sound like. Or sometimes we just plain get them approval over that stuff. You know, it's not just that the audio publisher has to meaningfully, you know, discuss this stuff with the author. The author has the final say, and the book just cannot proceed to publication without, you know, this the author really approving of either the narrator or the cover.
I was wondering the other day, you know, in the television show Murder, She Wrote, Jessica always does her own Audible versions of her books. Are there any big authors who do their own Audible versions?
Well, there is audiobook self-publishing through a program created by Audible called ACX, and it's kind of like a step down from, you know, professional audiobook publishing in that you essentially have to record your own audiobook, and, you know, the quality is just...
Oh, it's not going to be the same. But are there any authors who are good enough that they can narrate their own?
There are some authors that narrate their own audiobooks, like a couple clients of ours, Deepak Chopra and Michael Ondaatje. They both have narrated their own audiobooks in the past, usually in celebrity nonfiction, especially where the celebrity is like an actor or some kind of performer and has experience in that space. Then the publisher's keen to it because it's actually another selling point for the audiobook. But in most cases, audiobook publishers are not open to the author reading their own audiobook because
they're not professional.
They're not professional narrators, and it takes studio time. There's a separate narrator's fee for that. And
it takes a special talent. You know, I had Amor Towles on for, you know, A Gentleman in Moscow. Mm. And, of course, that's a wonderful book. And I invited his narrator on because his narrator was so good. Mm. So a good narrator can make a big difference with a book.
Oh, of course. I mean, if you listen to Andy Weir's The Martian, the audiobook narrator, it's one guy, but he can do so many different voices. The range is phenomenal. I think that audiobook actually published before Knopf had done anything with The Martian. It's its own skill set. And if you get the chance to narrate your own audiobook, for one, you have to be a big name, but two, if you do, it's a big coup. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what's new on the pipeline for you? What's coming up?
Well, I mean, right now I think, you know, BEA will be coming up in June. That's Book Expo America. It's a big bookseller convention, and publishers, authors, you know, from all over the world come and enjoy that event. And so we'll have clients there doing signings, giveaways of ARCs and galleys of their books. You know, that was all on the heels of the London Book Fair, which, you know, just took place a little while ago. And so while we were there, we met with over 350 foreign publishers over the course of a few days. The agency has a very big presence there. We take up, you know, four tables in the front row. Most agencies probably don't attend, or they hire an outside company to do this stuff for them. And I mean, that's one of the biggest book fairs in the world, next to the Frankfurt Book Fair, which is in October. So those are, you know, some of the big events. And you know, now a lot of books coming out in the spring for the spring holidays. will be coming out. And then summer, actually, in publishing is a relatively quiet time. So some folks might be looking forward to that.
You can get out into the countryside and get some reading done. You know, Mark, I want to thank you so much for being on my program today. Mark Gottlieb with Trident. I am so thrilled that I was able to talk to you. And I want to just ask you, please send your writers my way. I'm always looking for wonderful authors. And I hope that the first one that I will be able to do, you know, is coming up here in May. And that's going to be Samantha Chase, whose new book is coming out. I think it's called The Bridal Squad. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's terrific.
And she's terrific. And I love her books. I'd love to talk to her. So once we get off the phone, I will send you an email and you can check her availability so that she can come on and talk. Okay?
Hey, I'm all for it. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Well,
I appreciate it.
Mark, I really appreciate it. I want people to... are you looking for any particular type of book right now that people can query you?
Well, unlike most people, I'm very open to most anything, you know. In terms of nonfiction, it's very important to have a really, really strong platform, or celebrity nonfiction, you know, tends to be easier to do. But in terms of fiction, I'm very open.
Okay.
You know, I acquire like a wide range of different things.
Well, they can read about you. All they have to do is go to TridentMediaGroup.com and look up Mark Gottlieb and make a submission.
Excellent. Thanks again.
Thanks again, Mark. Nice talking to you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay. You too. Bye now. Wow. He's a great guy. And I really would suggest that you have a look at Trident, because Trident, as he said, I mean, they are the number one agency. That's simple as that. And they have quite a few agents there. What you always have to do is go to one of these agency websites, look up the agents, see who's looking for what type of book, and they always have a listing there. They have a listing of Mark's clients, and all of the other agents have a listing of their books. So you can tell if your book fits in with the kind of book that they are looking for. But you can also just try. If you think that you have a book that Mark would like, make a query letter and make it interesting. Make it really fun. Something that they will read beyond the first paragraph. So that, remember, you have to have the hook, the book, and the cook. And if you do it in that order, but mostly get that hook going so that they get down to the second paragraph where you're talking about the book. And meanwhile, just remember, find your joy and share it. And don't let anyone ruin your day. Say something nice to somebody. Have a great weekend. It's going to be just a perfect weather for getting out there on the beach and reading, sitting by the pool or in the hammock under a tree, and just read and get those gray cells working. Don't watch any more reruns. That's enough. You need to expand your mind. So this is Patsy with a Z saying, say something nice to somebody today. I will say thank you to Big Ed in the control room, and bye for now. See you on Tuesday. Bye.